Welcome to Expounded Universe, Season 6, Episode 12, Silling Dazeem Softly. The book, Planet of Twilight, by Barbara Hambly. The year, 1997, Chapters 21 and 22, with your hosts, Jeff and John. Let's go.
Drag me to Taytel. My jerk-off motion is one of the endless. I mean, or, you know, you can just cover R2-D2 in flesh.
And here we go! Expounded Universe back on the air, discussing Planet of Twilight for the last time.
Well, not quite the last time. We have a wrap-up episode.
But discussing the end of Planet of Twilight for the first time.
Discussing the last of the specific chapters.
We're in the Planet of Twilight endgame now.
We're in the Planet of Twilight Infinity War now.
I've read 14 million different Star Wars books, and only one of them ended good.
Jokes.
Jokes about that MCU.
Yeah, we got them.
I got them. That's the kind of jokes I got. I'm Jeff, and that's John, and you know who we are.
Yeah, we got crossover nerd humor.
Yeah, if you wanted some of that, we're here for you. You want some, like, His Dark Materials jokes?
Too bad.
Keep moving. I haven't read those.
Neither have I. Yeah. I did see the one movie and remember, basically nothing about it.
there's certain holes in our nerdery. It's true.
Yeah, and we just need them to be filled. If you could just fill up our holes.
Yeah, if you could help us fill our holes. Like Ginny Weasley.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's an old in-joke from back when I was part of Harry Potter fans with some friends.
Good.
We were always saying that Ginny Weasley had a penis-shaped hole in her that she just couldn't fill. Except with penises.
That's weird.
I know. We had to be in a fandom where we were talking about an adult Ginny Weasley, though.
Yeah.
Because when you're talking about like the one who's like 3 years younger than Harry Potter and is dating him anyway, and you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Meh. Meh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Aurora Borealis.
Okay, so it is the last two chapters, and we are going to start out chapter 21 with Luke and Leia on the move. They are headed to Ashgad's.
Mm-hmm. There, once again, we get some descriptions of how rad this car is.
Hell yeah. Like, Beldorion's chasing them, but all Leia can think about is, man, this is a really nice car. It's basically the limo because it's got like a bar and shit in there.
Oh, yeah. It's a super. She points out that it's almost the size of a B-wing and wonders how the hell it got to the planet in the first place.
Yeah.
Apparently Ashgad tried 7 or 8 times to get one of these things onto the planet, and they kept getting shot down and destroyed. And Aunt Jin kept picking up the wreckage, and so she was the only person who could fix these stupid things once he finally got a real one to the planet.
Yeah. So she's spending most of her time going like, oh man, it's got these leather seats.
What a smooth ride for a family of four. This would be a perfect thing to drive around on gray rocks at the beach or, you know, just in a city while listening to the hottest music.
Yeah.
I know if this thing had an Audi logo on it, it'd pretty much be the product placement that we keep getting stuck into it.
And Luke is driving, and we know that this vehicle is so amazing because the, like, inner grav is so great that even though Luke is driving like a madman, she's like, oh, it's basically like I'm just sitting on my bed at home.
Mm-hmm. She's like, as a rule, I don't like to ride in cars that Luke is driving because Luke drives like an insane person. But this thing's got such powerful dynamic range 16-track double steering that even I feel secure in it. Mobcat, the definition of luxury.
They also have a crap ton of weaponry in there
because
they took all the like nonsense that Ashgad was giving to the newcomers to blow up the...
Yeah, so they have the fanciest weapons on the planet, the Lorinar Corporation's brand new fancy flamethrowers and rocket launchers and cool blasters. Mm-hmm. Lorinar, luxuriousness personified.
Yeah, I mean, goddamn, the opening of this is just her being like, wow, these are so nice, and this car is nice, and these are nice.
Yeah, everything on this planet that Seti Ashgad bought is great.
Man, if only he wasn't evil. This is wonderful.
Luke, did you see his washer-dryer set? It was from Kenmore. Leia, I couldn't help but notice his washer-dryer set either.
Obviously,
the fact
I
that they
did.
Stacked vertically provided so much additional space to the kitchen area of his home.
But then they do have at least one little conversation before they get to Ashgad's,
mm-hmm.
which is just them talking about Q Varks.
Yeah, who I could have sworn earlier in the book was named Q Varg.
Nah, man, Q Varks.
It's been Q Varks the whole time? Okay. So Q Varks is the senator who, I guess, represents this part of space in the Republic or whatever. And he's been the idiot the whole time. The person that Ashgad and his loyalist group and Dazeem managed to get to. And we're like, hey, we'll totally make you ultra wealthy if you help Lorinar Corporation help us get off planet with all these sexy crystals.
Yeah, like...
Oh, by the way, there's going to be a little plague.
Yeah, they're not really sure if he knew exactly what was going on, but he knew enough that it was like, my dude, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah, he was basically, Luke's trying to be nice to him in this conversation, because Luke's always like, oh, I want to see the good side in everybody.
Yeah, he's like, maybe he just didn't realize what he was doing.
Maybe he's just a dumb fucking chump, Leia. Did you ever think of that? I mean, he is in Space Congress. What a bunch of chumps. And she's like, no, no one could be this stupid. He was like, oh, I'm cool with a little plague, but just a little plague.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's not a Death Seed plague.
Oh, no!
Oh, my petard!
The Death Seed. Plague's personified.
This plague is so luxurious.
It's the best plague. It's completely undetectable. Spread only by thumb-sized bugs.
Thumb bugs.
Mm-hmm.
So they do get to Ashgad's, and they're just wasting no time. Like, they fucking ion blast open the garage.
Yeah, they just shoot the fuck out of the garage with things and go riding in, and they know what they're doing. Like, as they arrive at the garage, they're still being pursued by Beldorion's round palatial dais speeder thing.
I guess.
Whatever. It's got to be big enough to hold a 45-foot-long hut, so it's got to be something. Probably one of those skiffs. But their plan is to stop the Reliant from taking off, which is Ashgad and Dazeem's boxy-ass freighter ship.
Yeah.
Now, Ashgad has already succeeded in a big part of his plan, which is to blow up enough guns from one of the gun stations to be able to get off planet.
Yeah, that one gun station that we saw the grenades go into and get fucked up last time
mm-hmm.
is down. So he's like, great, I've got a little narrow corridor where that was the one gun station that had any sort of sway over, so I've just got to thread the needle and I won't get shot.
Yep. And just as they managed to get to the landing platform after dashing up a bunch of stairs, which were full of Drox again.
Like, oh, yeah. But
carpeted sea of Drox.
They straight go in like fucking dudes from The Thing.
Or aliens, yeah.
Flamethrowers a-going, and mm-hmm. they're just like, all right, let's fucking blast everything.
Screw your stupid little bug monsters. So they just walk in with flamethrowers, torch the entire room that separates them from where they need to go.
Oh, yeah, they're just flame the entire stairs. They get to that little antechamber room, flame the entire room.
Yeah, just screw this, and just run over a bunch of cooked bugs.
Yeah. They're like, ooh, little crunchy bugs.
Yeah, so when they finally manage to make it to the landing platform, it's slightly too late. The Reliant is already taken off and is heading for the stars.
Oh, no! And, they have mildly messed with the two remaining ships in the hangar. That weird one that has, like, the several boxes that connect that he was using to transport shit.
Yes, yeah.
And then a Z-95.
Yeah, a heavily modified skip-ray blast boat, they're saying.
Yeah.
Which is really heavily modified if it's modular, but sure, why not?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, an old-ass Z-95 that honestly, Zeddy Ashgad probably came to this planet in the first place on.
Most likely.
Because he's the guy who invented them, apparently.
Yeah.
But what they've done is basically pulled the distributor caps.
Yeah, they were like, oh, this all will stop you for enough time so we can leave.
Yeah. So, unfortunately, they didn't count on the fact that Luke is also the greatest starship mechanic outside of Chewbacca, mostly.
Mostly.
Yeah. So, he's just like, well, I'm going to start fixing these. Help me get the following couple of things or whatever.
I need the cart. Give me the mechanical crash cart. So, Leia, like, takes a big red cart full of tools and runs over and does shit with that. And then we've got Luke basically, like, hides inside the Z-95 trying to get it all set.
Yeah.
When Beldorion bursts in, he's like, motherfuckers, I am Hutt.
This is actually pretty cool because he comes roping his way in like a giant monster. I mean, we already know. I'm pretty sure there's probably a translation error and he's not supposed to be, you know, a whale shark long. But
no, I assume just like with the plant guy, you should just sort of move the decimal place over one.
Yeah.
And be like, oh,
he's 4.5 meters.
Yeah, 3.5 instead of 35 meters.
Yeah, because he is. I think they said he was 15 meters long, which, you know, theoretically could be. I mean, he's really old, but so's Chewbacca. Wait.
Yeah, so's Chewbacca.
So's Chewbacca. It's
and
not relevant.
Chewbacca's not huge.
It's not relevant, but Chewbacca is also really old. I meant to say, what's his
Jabba?
Jabba Desilogic Tiere, who we saw way back on in Clone Wars falling asleep during the pod races.
Yeah.
Anyway, he comes loping in here on his big muscly legs and is like, "Hello, little girl. I may be old and lazy, but I am still Beldorian."
Yeah, and apparently, I don't know how they know this or why they think it, but they're like, "Oh, Dazeem mind-controlled Beldorian into wanting to kill us for some reason."
I mean, I assume. It seems like it'd be pretty easy. He could just be like, "Here, eat this plate of Drox."
No, but it's like, something behind his eyes is making him be like, oh, it's Dazeem that's forcing him to do this.
Yeah, he's infected with madness somehow. He wouldn't normally do this because he's... Well, they actually make a thing about how he's still a Jedi and not like a Sith or anything. He's just a mad Jedi.
Yeah, he's gone nuts.
Yeah. This fight is interesting for me because Hambly really pulls out the stops on the $5 words.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of them in particular here that are... a little challenging. First, his voice is described as stentorous. Not stentorian, stentorous.
She really brought out the thesaurus for this one.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, I got to get some new words in here. How do I describe this fight?
Well, I mean, it's going to end with the goop inside of him being described as of a nigrous consistency.
Yeah.
That was, that took me out of things for a second.
Yeah, but the fight is very much... like, oh, finally Leia takes what she learned in, like, the hour of
know,
practice with Callista.
She's all, like, mentally thanking Callista while she pulls her lightsaber. And she's like, thank you, Callista. Thank you, Luke, for the training that I have received from you over one afternoon.
Yeah. He's like, oh, boy, now I know exactly how to fight a trained old-ass Hutt. And so she just is like, oh, I got to dart in and out and... I gotta watch out for his giant fucking tail that's gonna try and kill me.
Yeah, because this dude is not messing around. First of all, he's like 10 times stronger than her. I mean, he's got massive Hutt arm strength. He's got a lightsaber that he's got out, which, unfortunately, I always like to know what color lightsabers are. And his is described as the color of hot smoke.
Hot smoke.
I don't really know. Does that mean it's kind of a gray, or are we talking, it's just another red lightsaber?
I assumed it was purplish.
You think it's a purple saber?
Yeah.
I think in the art I've seen of this, it's white.
That's weird.
Yeah.
But okay.
But it's hot smoke is the only description it gets.
Hot smoke.
Now there's a couple things that happen here. This is actually a pretty neat fight scene. It's described as him just slamming his bulk around and trying to use the fact that he's got a long whippy tail for advantage.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's basically him just going, I'm bigger and stronger than you,
mm-hmm.
and like even when Leia can parry his blows, it still just like slams into the lightsaber and
yeah.
almost knocks her off balance.
Yeah, virtually breaking her wrists with each one of his massive hammer swings. They keep describing the lightsabers as getting twined up, which I have a hard time picturing Spaceballs.
Yeah,
right?
I'm like, yeah, it's Spaceballs. Okay, I'll put my foot here.
Every time that they manage to lock sabers, it's not safe for her. She needs to get the hell out of there because he just whips his tail at her then.
Oh, yeah.
He is an extremely dangerous foe, but at least he's not really using the Force at the same time.
Oh, no, wait. There we go. It's a violet.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He has a deadly thrumming, a pallid and sickly violet.
That's awesome. I want a really pale lightsaber, purple lightsaber. That's a rad color.
I was like, I thought I remembered it being purple.
It's rad that when cool Jedi come to, because these two characters, him and Tiselda, didn't show up on this planet as evil Jedi.
No.
So all their leftover stuff they still own is good guy Jedi nonsense.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty great. There's this thing, a thing where she's like, I learned important lessons from Callista yesterday afternoon during summer camp. And one of the things that she taught me is that there's only one way for women to be allowed to lightsaber fight, which is that you have to dive in and out, over and over again.
Yep.
and try to hit that G-spot.
So she's mostly just like jumping in, swinging around, jumping back, which she has to do because if she is within range of him, he's either going to tail whip or just power slam with the lightsaber into her.
Yeah.
So she's got to just sort of like make little quick jabbing slash movements and then get the fuck out.
Eventually Luke pops out of the Z95 long enough to see that the fight's going down, but he just sort of sagely nods. He's just like, yes. I mean, it doesn't really matter. He needs to go stop the Death Seed. He can't stop working on the Headhunter.
Yeah.
So, but he's like, she's definitely got this. I can tell.
Oh, yeah.
And then
she's had an hour of training. She's good.
She read the manual that came with the lightsaber. It's fine.
Well, the one thing he does notice is he's like, ooh, look at that fighting style. That definitely reminds me of someone.
Well, it's funny because it's a specific move. Because eventually Beldorion slips up, slams on her, down on her, and she just sort of spins around it and then dashes along the length of him, cutting him open on the side.
Yeah.
Like, so she's just holding the lightsaber out and clotheslining him open.
Yeah, because she basically uses the Force to tell, like, oh, he's about to do this move where he's going to try and, like, slam this direction, and I'm just going to get out of the way and slice down.
Yeah, and Luke's like, ah, oh, I recognize that low side cut. That could have only been taught to her by one person. And I was like, so you've known Callista for, like, 3 weeks, really, and in that time you watched her fight a lot of tube-shaped dudes?
But I do love the description of when she cuts him open, where he just, like, deflates like a balloon as all of his goo comes pouring out of him.
All over her. She's like straight up a Double Dare physical challenge happens. He becomes the nose.
Oh, yeah. I mean, apparently all of Hutt guts are under pressure, and the second you pierce that shit, they just come flying out.
I mean, she basically cut him from ass to ears, so... there's a big old open hole down one side of him, and I guess he just sort of gushes out that side.
Yeah, he's like a big old Hutt gusher.
Yeah, and she's standing in the way still, so she just gets completely coated in what is described as Nigris slime.
Oh boy.
You know, it's a word you should probably go ahead and let retire. I know it just means black, like, you know, the Spanish word for black, what have you, but it's just... It doesn't need... You could just say black.
You could.
You could
do that.
No one could take it away from you.
No, there but I've got so this many, thesaurus, and by God, I will use
there
it.
There are so many weird little $5 words scattered throughout this... Not just... Specifically this fight sequence in particular.
Oh, yeah.
But then through the rest of the chapter as well. There's just all these, like... I don't even remember all of them, but
no.
But every time I hit one, I was like, ah, look at that. An interesting word from yesteryear.
So... Beldorion goes down basically at the same time that Luke manages to fix the Headhunter.
Yeah, he sort of blorps down into a goop pile. So at least when he takes off, he knows that Leia is okay, because she looks up from all her slime mass, and she's like, it's cool, Luke, I found a little flag.
I got it.
We can go back to the trivia challenge part that no one gives a fuck about.
So Luke just hops in the cockpit and takes off. Mm-hmm. He's like, all right, fuck this, I'm out of here. I'm going to go try and kill this dude.
Yeah. Luckily, Luke is also an ace pilot, so he rapidly ascends in his Z95 Headhunter, which is basically an X-Wing. What a perfect ship for him.
Yeah. It's basically an X-Wing that very specifically isn't his X-Wing.
Once again, his X-Wing is safe somewhere else.
But the Z95 is faster than the Reliant,
mm-hmm.
because the Reliant is more of...
It's a box. It's a freighter.
Yeah, it's more like a cargo ship than it is a fighter.
And that shit doesn't matter once they get down to out of atmosphere, of course, because there's no drag. But in atmosphere, the hovers that are taking the Reliant out are taking a while, because it's basically a minivan, a space van.
Yeah. So, you know...
And it's a rockin'.
Luke gets to... fly up, and he's got that whole, like, oh, baby, I sure do love flying, and here's them stars, and ooh, yeah, I love it.
Yeah. And he gets up close enough to draw a bead on the Reliant, but oh, no, there's those CCIR needle things, those little droid ships.
Of course, by the time he comes out of Atmo and sees everything, he's like, what the fuck is going on here?
Oh, shit, there's like a huge Imperial fleet here and a small Rebel fleet or Republic fleet here.
And, hey, is that the Falcon?
Huh? The shit is going... What? Who?
What the fuck is happening?
Yeah. There's a huge space fight happening. Like an enormous space fight. But he can't think about that. He has to focus on the Reliant. So he takes a couple of pot shots at it, hits an engine, but doesn't manage to destroy the ship. It's still there.
No,
and then Neil...
Ashgad calls for cover while they're going because he's getting shot at. So just a bunch of needles fucking wreck the Z-95.
Yeah, just shoot him right the hell down. And he starts hearing radio chatter from a Admiral Larm, who's the bad guy admiral here, the local Imperial warlord.
Yeah, I mean, he's not Gatellus, but he's like the admiral under him.
Yeah, he's some dude who serves under Moff Gatellus, who is not a character appearing in this film.
Yeah.
So Luke's C-95 shot down, apparently is not fully out of atmosphere yet because it starts to fall.
Yeah. It gets sucked into the gravity well of the planet, and so he starts going down, and he's taking all of the energy, and he's like, look, I don't care about shields anymore, so all power going to thrusters. I got to try and not blow up on reentry.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, well, crap. Hopefully the Falcon or something figures out what I was up to and tries to blow up the Reliant. So he's still trying, but as he's looking down at the planet looming large in his view screen, he notices that the rocks are arranged in a pattern he kind of remembers.
But then he's like, I can't think about that. I got to pull up. Yep. I got to try and save myself.
And then we get a scene missing, and he's like,
yeah,
he comes to, and he's like,
what the fuck?
I don't even remember how I landed and got out of that ship before it exploded.
Boy, I probably used the Force or something. Anyway, here I am lying on the ground.
Well, shoot, definitely killed another blacksmith.
So he's lying on the ground, and finally, fucking finally, he gets, like, messages from the crystals, and he's like, wait a minute.
Now I get it.
You're alive.
The Jawas, in my dream, represented an indigenous population that was being deprogrammed against their will. You're rocks! And this is the thing that drives me nuts. When he's like, wait a minute, you rocks are alive. They're like, yes, alive. And I'm like, you know, you should have started with that shit, rocks.
Maybe,
yes, rocks, alive. And he'd be like, oh, rocks alive? Okay, I get you.
Hey, it's us, the crystals, we're alive.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would be like, oh, cool. But instead, his mind is blown by this. He has never been as surprised by anything as he has in his life.
This isn't even the first species of crystal people that Luke has encountered. This is irritating.
Yeah, no. Hambly really writes it like Luke is going to lose his shit over this.
Yeah. Well, he basically gets a cosmic moment at the end of this. Because he's like, wait a minute. You guys are alive? Then what's the deal? What the fuck is wrong?
What even is life?
And they're like, okay, so here's what happened. They basically explained to him what happened. They're like, all right, we are crystals. Long ago, there was an ocean on this planet, and it grew us like fucking sea monkeys. And then the oceans receded to somewhere. Don't worry about it.
It's cool.
And we're still here. We're crystal rocks, and we live forever. We are the crystal gems.
And we are basically a hive mind.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew when people came here, didn't give a shit. We knew when the Drox showed up and we gave a shit about that because we recognized they were bad.
Yeah.
So we're the only ones keeping him at bay. And
it turns out their thing where their radiation kills Drox when sunlight filters through it is on purpose.
Yeah, it's basically just them using weird force powers.
Yeah, they have realigned themselves internally such that they create a radiation that murders Drox.
So they just kind of explain everything to Luke, and they're like, okay, so you gotta understand that when these dudes come down and take one of our self-brothers, then they get reprogrammed, and it sucks for us. We want them back. And Luke makes a bargain with them.
He makes quite a promise.
He's like, oh, well, I tell you what, I'm going to get literally every crystal that's ever been taken off of this planet back to you if you just give me a ridiculous level of cosmic control over crystals for a hot second.
Yeah, basically what he wants is, he asks them, hey, you know those little space fighters up there that have your, like, dead brothers and sisters in them? Can you still, like, make them do stuff? And they're like, we did not think of that because we are weird rocks. The answer is yes. You think, oh, well, that'd be really useful given that those synthroids that are on the planet that you're on.
Well, I think the problem with it was they basically needed to go through Luke because they're like, oh, their minds have been changed such that we aren't quite able to, like, mesh with them. We don't realize how.
But if they use Luke as some kind of focusing mechanism, then maybe they can bounce the signal off Jupiter and get some kind of boost or something.
I mean, in this scene, I basically imagine Luke as getting, like, you know that scene in
lifted off the ground and white light coming out.
Oh,
of
yeah, just the light out of his eyes and mouth.
Yeah, single tear.
And that's sort of the thing that's going on here, because he gets flooded with force power, but then he's able to like turn the needles on Dazeem's ship.
See, I like that. I do like that he turns the needles on Dazeem's ship, but I was kind of hoping that basically the bigger rocks on the planet would get just give him direct control over their lightning power, and he just used lightning to shoot down the Reliant.
For a second, I thought that's what was happening, because it doesn't say, this is the end of chapter 21. It doesn't actually say in the end of 21 that the needles specifically blow it up. It just says that, like, all this power goes through him, and, you know, if he were able to look up at the sky and wasn't just racked with ridiculous power and pain, he would see an explosion going on up there. And I'm like, did he just force crush a, like, entire ship from the surface?
That'd be pretty cool.
But no, it was just he took over the little droid things.
And all he did was like, hey, go take this thing out. It's got the death seat on it. And they're like, yes, boss.
All right.
So there you go. That's more or less the resolution. Although we do, I want to make sure we talk about this because it's an interesting bit of stuff that happens in this chapter. It turns out the Sills can give him local remote viewing access to the synth droids on Dazeem's ship.
Yeah.
And that is some gribbly shit that's going on inside that ship right now.
Oh, yeah. The he gets to see basically through the synth droids, and Seti Ashgad is covered in these drocks, and they're just like crawling into his mouth and fucking,
they're crawling in his skin and his wounds, they will not heal.
Because the drocks crawl in, the drocks crawl out, the drocks play pinochle on his snout.
He's got bugs
and other things
and other songs about bugs. He's become the Oogie Boogie Man.
Yeah.
So he's basically sitting in a big floating sea of drocks, still kind of vaguely working the controls of the ship, but really, it's clear that Dazeem has basically gotten what he wants, so he's just revoked all of the privileges he's been affording Ashgad all this time.
Yeah, he's like, great, I'm off the planet, I don't need to worry about the dumb crystal radiation, so it's motherfucking go o'clock.
I'm going to torture you to death, and yeah, he literally just kills him while he's sitting there, because it doesn't matter at this point. The Imperials are going to, as far as Dazeem is concerned, the Imperials have already sent a tug. They're going to drag that ship into an Imperial ship, and then it's go time for Dazeem.
Yeah. And then it's just, I will go to every planet forever. Nothing can stop me.
Yeah. So he's got his shirt off, and he's just a gribbly mass of random tubes and tendrils and gribbles and what have you. And
he's just sitting there with
laughing,
like,
laughing to himself.
Weird mouths on his chest. And
Yeah. Basically just laughing and breathing heavy because he's about to infect the galaxy.
Yeah.
And then he gets blowed up by them, the needle fighters.
Which is very good.
Yeah. And I think, does this chapter also end with the Sinar, the Imperial Separatist fleet arriving?
No.
It's in the next one? Okay.
Yeah, this one is just, the end of it is he passes out after making the needles blow up the ship.
Yeah.
21 starts with Dala being like, yo, what up? I'm here.
Oh, yeah. 22, last chapter. 22, yeah, Dala and her giant fleet of like 3,000 ships come bursting out of hyperspace.
Except, no, it's just the aftermath.
Oh, that's right. We get a description of what had happened.
Yeah, we get the worst thing, which is just Dala shows up and is like, you know, there was a rad space battle just a minute ago. We won. Anyway, that's not important.
I don't know how it happened. We must have used the Force or something. What happened to that Grand Admiral Larm character we were talking about? He's dead.
Oh, he got blown up because his tug ship got blown up along with Dazeem's ship.
What happened to the needle fighters? They all turned and flew right back to the planet after they blew up some random freighter. We're not sure what was going on.
Yeah, well, I mean, they had to come back to the planet because they've got crystals in them.
Yes. Yeah, well, no, I'm saying this is because this chapter opens from more or less Han and Dala's perspective.
Yeah, it's just Dala being like, hey, I'm on planet now, and how you doing?
Well, she's grumpy. I love the description of her ship as having smoke generators in it or something, just so that when she's sitting in her important parts of her ship, she can be wreathed in cool mist.
Yeah. They go down to the planet, though.
Imperial ships come standard with that kind of nonsense.
Oh, yeah.
It's for evader visits.
It's intimidation tactics.
Yeah.
But they're on the surface, and they're just sort of talking about what happened. They're like, oh, yeah, you know, even though the needle fighters all left, we were still basically outnumbered. But, you know, then my dude show up and it was basically cool and we won.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you probably were expecting a chapter about this rad space fight between us and the Imperials. But no, what's going to happen.
Instead, we
get Umali Darm showing up.
Yeah, Umali Darm, who now can finally use her freighter.
Yeah. She's like, ooh, baby, look at all these things for me to scavenge.
Yeah, I'm going to try and take some of these. I'm going to take a shipload of Meiji off planet. It'll be open, the cream of the market. I'll be able to get whatever I want for it.
Great. But as well, on her appearance, Dala brought Han. So Han and Leia get reunited.
Yeah, Han and Leia. And Leia is still covered in crusty-ass hut slime.
And Han is just, like, full of nasty dust and unshaven.
He's just been running from shit planet to shit planet trying to deal with the Neil fighter thing because
he's got like crusted sweat on him.
So he hasn't taken a shower since he had to go down to that frozen planet and find all those people huddling by the reactors.
Oh, yeah. So it's just two nasty babies hugging up on each other.
Yeah, exactly. Luke comes by and is like, "We did it, of course, and I don't want a hug from either of you. Hi, guys." And you know, Leia sees Dala standing off by herself looking in the other direction, totally pulling that Magus-style power move. And she's like, "What? What the hell is... huh?" And Han's like, "Yeah, don't worry about it." She basically wants to talk to you later about some provisions she'd like in exchange for the help she just provided.
Well, basically, she just wants you to let her have Paducah's Chorios.
Which, honestly, it's got nothing to do with Leia. Because the moment they settle in on Paducah's Chorios, they become the majority population of Paducah's. And that means that she's not able to go in there and do things to them. That was the whole plot of this book, was she couldn't do shit for Nam Chorios because Seti Ashgad was a minority.
Well, yeah, but that's what they're saying, is they'll be the majority, so she can do something for them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what she can do for them is leave them the fuck alone.
Oh, yeah.
They don't want to join the Republic, and they never will.
No. But that's the whole point, is like, we're going to be in charge, basically, of this planet,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to ask you to not do the same dumb bullshit you pulled here.
Except Paducah's Chorios is just a regular-ass planet. I don't think
it's
covered.
Yeah, there's no weird death bugs.
Yeah, or magic super crystals.
And Luke has to then just show up and explain the plot to everyone else who missed it.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, "Hey, everybody, so the CCIRs, the Drox, all that... yeah, it's all connected in the circle of life. So I got to go find all these crystals." And they're like, "What?"
Yeah, he's like, "So, okay, here we go. We got to explain the entire..." And there's all like new characters that show up only in this explanation.
He's like, "Look, I got to go find these. Now, don't worry. Lorinar's not going to care about these needles anymore because the crystals here can communicate with their brethren." And I'm like, "What's the range on that? And didn't they have to use you to do that?"
Well, the first time, yeah. But I'm guessing that now that they've done it, they can figure out how to do it on their own.
And then why does he need to do any... like, couldn't he just go like, hey, CCIRs, come on back to the planet?
Well, I mean, only the ones that are in needle fighters, because those are the only ones that have space capacity. And even then, they don't have hyperdrives.
Nah.
They have to come through with a little bit... like, they have to come through with carrier ships and then get dropped off where they're going. The ones that are in synth droids can't run home to Nam Chorios. So he's got to go around and collect all the synth droids and all the crystals that Lorinar still has that are just like in boxes and shit. They're not even connected to robos yet.
I love the question that Han has where he's like, "But how are you going to get Lorinar to like go along with this?" And Leia's like, "I have proof that they tried to murder the galaxy and sell out to the Imperials. I think we'll be fine with just going, hey, how about you give us all these crystals back and we don't blow up your bullshit."
Yeah, of course, it's a Senate. So what will actually happen is she'll go back and raise a complaint and the space Mitch McConnell will be like, "Yeah, but we get a lot of money from them. So, yeah." In this galaxy, I actually am a turtle man.
But yeah, she's just like, "Oh, we'll put so many sanctions on them that they'll go out of business in a week."
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, sure, you will.
Sure. What you'll actually do is bail them out.
Nah, man, this is space where things actually happen.
It's space where the Senate is a good thing.
Yeah. It's the fantasy setting where...
Well, this is a relatively new Senate. It hasn't had 200 years to slowly decay into the useless nonsense it is now. Okay, fair enough.
So, yeah, he has to explain what his dumb plan is.
Mm-hmm.
And Umali's getting all of her shit together, and then he sees, hey, wait a minute, that's that that person that I saw who, like, threw the grenades back when I was going up against that first thing in the early chapters when I was with the newcomers. And
every time we describe her, she is gawky and awkward, but also completely at ease and poised. I have no idea. This lanky, awkward, gawky, graceful person, they keep saying. And I'm like, come on, stop that.
This beanpole of a goddess. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what?
What? Yeah. It's basically like if Roger Rabbit and Jessica Rabbit were the same thing at once.
But she removes her veils and it is Callista.
The hair. She has the hair of a Kramingla.
And Luke, for his credit, is like, nah, man. Nah, she's got to go her own way. Go her own way.
I'll break the chain.
Tusk.
Rock on, gold dust woman.
So,
I guess I'm just secondhand news.
So, Luke pretty much just has a little internal thing where he's like, well, I guess this is done. And he just kind of like waves at her.
Farewell. I guess the landslide brought our relationship down.
And as soon as he does do that, Callista noticeably relaxes, like, oh, thank God he's not going to run over
here. He's not going to do anything awkward.
He's not going to just come over here and be like, my darling.
She's already picked a vast open plain to stand on, so he won't have anywhere to lean up against and try and block her walking path. Hey, what you doing? I guess I'll just go back to liking all of her Facebook pictures.
So, yeah, that's basically the end of Callista and Luke on this, is they wave to each other, and then she gets on Umali's ship and takes the fuck off.
Yeah, she's got to go do her own thing. I don't even know what her own thing is at this point.
I mean,
she had to stop this nonsense because she knew about it and it was important to her.
Well, she was like, I got to go to that planet because I've heard the planet is, like, super force, so maybe it can give me force powers.
Right.
And it didn't.
No.
She's like, great, I'm off to go try and find more force powers.
Yeah, so she's off on her own journey to find force powers, and she really just wants to break up with Luke. Like, the whole thing where she's like, I can't be part of his life because I don't have force powers, and it'll never... Really, she should just be more open about this and be like, I don't want to date Luke anymore because Luke kind of sucks.
But no, her whole thing is, no, it's not you, it's me.
Yeah. Just be honest with him while you're breaking up with him. It would save you a fuckload of trouble. Because otherwise he's just going to keep hyperspacing to wherever you are and be like, I figured out a way we can be together. Because that's what you want, right? Like, because that's what you said when we had to break up was you wanted to be with me and you actually did love me. So
there was just one problem and I fixed the problem.
I built a list. And she's like, I should have just fucking told you no more the first time.
Don't make a flowery emotional scene. Just be direct.
I'm sure they'll appreciate your candor.
You're so novel.
They should just Luke should just follow my teenage guide to popularity.
How many times has that fucking song come up now for us?
For us, like four.
God,
it's become part of our current in-joke block. Although, honestly, the long list of Fleetwood Mac songs is probably going to go right up in there for me. I only did like half of them off Rumors that time, so there's plenty more. You wait until I figure out a way to work Rhiannon into conversation.
So, the end of this book, instead of it being Luke waving to Callista, we have to go back aboard Dala's ship.
Once again, with the misty wreath things turned on, so she can be shrouded from the ankles down in cool mist.
Yeah.
I assume that she just doesn't have the rest of the Downs Party shit turned on. Like there's like three switches on the wall, and she always turns on the mist one, but there's another one where like little rotating colored lights come
down. Oh, yeah,
down.
You get the little laser lights.
Uh-huh. And then you flick that third one, and it's foam party time.
Luke has Ligeus with him,
mm-hmm.
and Ligeus is like, oh, Leia, I'm so glad you're fine, and everything's good now.
I'm a good guy, and I get a good guy ending, yes.
I've gotten older every second of this book. I drank from the wrong grail.
Yeah, pretty much. And then they go to talk to Dala about their plan to more or less give her sanctions and let her take over Paducah's Troyos.
Yeah, they're like, hey, we're going to let you have it. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
So they walk in. Leia's all prepped and primed and so on for this. And the moment
I'm ready for doing diplomacy.
We're doing diplomacy, Leia style. Which means I'll spend the entire time thinking about shit people told me 5 years ago. And then they walk in, and Dala's like, all right, so here's what we... Ligeus? and in the most unearned fucking thing.
The last fucking, like, 2 pages of this book, Ligeias and Dala are like, my long-lost love!
Oh, my ancient girlfriend from long ago!
This is, I guess, remember when I told you I had a lady and I had to let her go her own path? I guess it was Dala.
Uh-huh.
Great.
Except that the lesson he learned from having to let Dala go his own path is you can get her back when you're old, apparently.
Yeah, if you just wait long enough, it'll all come full circle, Luke.
He was just buying girl bonds.
And so, like, we get Dala described as, like, oh, all the, like, murder drops out of her eyes, and mm-hmm. she becomes, like, a little girl again.
Which is great, given how old-ass Ligeias is.
Ugh.
So it's like, what happened? Well, I've led a hard road, Ligeias. There were some cruelties.
Yes, it's been a hard, long road.
I spent the past 30 years either trying to fuck or trying to mourn my boss.
Yeah, my commanding officer.
It's all been stupid, and you shouldn't read about it because it's very unpleasant.
But we dated when I was like 15, and now we're both 70, so I'm sure this is great.
Yeah. You know, Will Huff Tarkin, the guy who was an old man when I met him in the first place?
The guy who was born an old man.
Yeah, I was dating him for a while, and then he died, and oh, boy.
Boy, howdy.
Let me tell you.
But
it's good to see you again, because I'm way into super old dudes.
And they...
that's just her thing.
That's just my thing.
She loves them silver foxes.
And they barely even say anything beyond that and just start making out, and then they leave hand in hand. They're like, the bye part, we're gonna go fuck.
I love that part where the two of them just walk off to fuck.
They're like, peace out, we're gonna go
you probably shouldn't have turned on these sexy fuck mists, because that made the problem worse.
Oh yeah. And everyone's just kind of watching this like, what the shit.
Like, you start hearing the angry sex noise coming from the next room, and it's Lucas just sagely nodding like the Gentle Ben meme.
Yes.
Sex is good. I miss having sex with my girlfriend, Callista.
But I just need to wait another 50 years, and then we'll bone down.
Lesson learned. Thanks, Ligeias. This is so friggin' unearned. It comes from nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, the only hint you get to it at all is that Ligeias mentions having a girlfriend at one point. He's a 70-year-old man. Of course he's had a girlfriend at some point.
Yeah, and this, I mean, it never read like foreshadowing that Ligeias was going to have anything like this. It just read as, Ligeias is a sage old man who understands how relationships work, and he's here to give advice to the young Luke.
Mm-hmm.
And instead they're like, ha ha, no, turns out he's gonna go to Bone Town with Dala. And you're like, what?
Huh? But I want her to come back out of the room in the same chapter and be like, huh, he died almost immediately in there. And I blame the New Republic.
And now time to go on a killing spree.
I mean, we do know that she goes on another anti-Republic killing spree after this.
Eventually,
yeah,
yes.
So maybe that's what it is.
So the very end of this, watching them go off to Bone, is just
Han
Luke
being like, huh.
Well, it's just Luke going, yeah. Yeah, Callista will be all right. She'll be strong. And then she'll come back in a few years, and we're going to bone down.
I want Han to lean in over his shoulder and be like, yeah, she will be fine, Luke. She'll be fine funneling the hogs of so many other men. How you doing, buddy? I'm sick of this. I'm going to be mean to you starting now instead of nice.
That's it. It's been a long road, but finally we can character assassinate Han again.
The statute of limitations on being nice to you about this shit breakup has passed.
Look, I got to be honest with you. You're not getting back together. You're being an idiot.
So from now on, any more mopey expressions and I will mercilessly rip into you, Luke. Brother-in-law of mine.
So we end with Leia asking Luke, are you all right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, yes.
Was Han too mean to you?
I am all right.
Do you want me to say something to him about that?
No, if you say something, it'll just be worse. Then he'll make fun of me more.
Just set him off again. Leia, are you offering to help him in there?
I hope you're not. A little chode.
Now I'm going to bust on him harder.
You got to know this. I'm a dick.
Hey, are you guys almost done talking in there? I just finished dipping my balls in Luke's caffeine.
There you go. There's
short episode.
Now, let me ask you a quick question.
Sure.
Did this book ever reveal why it's called Planet of Twilight?
No. In fact, it's very rarely Twilight on the planet.
Yeah.
They make
Twilight doesn't matter. It's only light or night.
Yeah.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. What's going on with the Twilight aspect of the planet?
I don't get it. I just don't.
Is it because Seti Ashcat is suffering from Sundowner Syndrome because he's so friggin' old?
He's in his Twilight years.
It's Ligeias and Dala having that Twilight sex.
Ligeias puts a lot of glitter on and he's like, I'm a vampire.
It doesn't even happen on the planet, but still.
Ooh, I'm so sexy of a vampire.
I'm 200 years old, and I love you specifically, high school girl.
I've been going to high school and macking on chicks for 200 years.
Aren't I an interesting character?
I'm a pervert.
It's better if you don't imagine my backstory in the slightest. Because the moment you look at me sideways, it all falls apart.
Oops-a-daisies, I'm a pedophile.
Darla, the thing I'm most attracted to about you is how boring you are. And your pickup truck, I guess. What the hell was the point of these movies?
You're so plain and you've got so much plaid on. I love it. You're like a boring lumberjack that stares into the middle distance. I love you.
Oh, I can't imagine a more exciting thing. It's like having sex with a lumberjack statue in front of a cigar store.
Yes, indeed. They have Twilight sex.
That's what Planet of Twilight's all about, John.
That's it. That's the that's the subtext here.
I don't know why it's called that, because the only thing on this planet that matters is daytime, because the daytime is what kills off the Drox.
And by the way, nighttime is the right time.
That is also mentioned in the book, is that the Sills is what that species of rocks that live on the planet are called.
Yeah, them T-Sills.
The T-Sills. It's T-S-I-L-S. We don't know if that T is silent or not.
We don't.
That could be T-Cells, that could be T-Sills, that could be Sills.
Who knows?
Might make turn into a Z sound, right? Like a Zill.
Like a Czar?
That could be Zills. Yeah, like a Czar. I think Zill is probably the most correct format based on the fact that Czar is a word.
I don't know.
Anyway, they have offered to help solve the Death Seed plague problem because they can turn them by. They can voluntarily give over some of their rocks to be used as special plague killing flashlights.
Yeah. So Luke's just like, yeah, we're gonna like shove crystals into a like giant flashlight and walk around and point them at bugs, and that ought to do it.
I assume it's going to be some orbital shit. Like, they're going to get enough crystals into a big orbiter thing that, like, you know, like, to reflect a bunch of radiated sunlight onto a planet and kill all the bugs at once.
I don't know, man. But
he's just like, hey, don't even worry about that part. The whole Choreo system, which is currently riddled with Death Seed, we're going to solve it with rock flashlights.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the end of this book, I know that some books, at least, that we have read, end with some change to the status quo. Whether it's, you know, like one character gets some weird thing, they meet someone new, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I understand that. But I feel like you've just really fucked up a lot of stuff for whoever writes next.
Well, I mean, of the books that we've read that are future Star Wars stuff, which one has had I think the one that's had the most change is probably Courtship, right? Because what really changes at the end of Crystal Star that matters?
Oh, I was going to say Crystal Star was probably the one, because at the end you've got a planet full of children to take care of.
I mean, yeah, sure, they get a planet full of spare Jedi, but that Jedi are not in short supply by the time Crystal Star comes out. Luke's already got a whole planet of Jedi. Now he just has to put a bunch of kids on it.
But, I mean, an entire orbital, like, giant Death Star-esque battle planet shows up.
I mean, that thing's neat and all, but it's not a battle planet. It doesn't have any weapons or anything. It's just a cool spaceship that happens to be planet-shaped. And again, we always bury the lead on that thing. It has its own small sun that follows it around.
Yep, indeed.
That's the good part. But the only one that really, like, moves the character needles forward in any way is Courtship, because it ends with Han and Leia getting married.
Yeah. And that's a thing where I'm like, yeah, you can do that in a book, but to be like,
yeah,
hey, I started the worst plague that's ever existed, and it's spread throughout all of these planets, and you can almost guarantee that probably also on any ships that took off have some of these bugs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anyway, I'll just say I hand wave it, and we'll take care of it with flashlights. And you're like, you can't do that. This is a plague situation where if one ship manages to fly off somewhere that you weren't thinking of,
mm-hmm,
and settles down there, you're going to have a whole nother thing.
Well, the whole thing where they're like, all right, here's the way we stop these minuscule, super tiny bugs from getting off planet is we shoot down anything bigger than a B-wing that tries to leave the planet or tries to come to the planet. Okay, well, eventually someone's just going to build, like, little drone-y ships and just fly in and fly back out again. You know, like, it's going to be the Space Amazon is going to be the thing that eventually murders everyone in the galaxy, because they'll be like,
just little drones.
We sent drones to the planet to drop off copies of books that people bought, and they came back with some weird bugs. No big deal.
No big deal.
Oh, shoot. Uh-oh. The plague.
Oh, no. We're all dead.
Yeah. So, it's a weird story. I mean, it all resolves itself very neatly in those last two chapters where, you know, anything interesting happens.
But as well with that, when they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to get rid of them using the fucking crystal radiation or whatever, I go, okay, that sounds nice and all, but you've had Drox surviving on a planet full of these crystals for, like, 100 years.
Yeah.
You haven't been able to get rid of them when they're right next to all of you.
Yeah.
How do you think it's going to work when you've got to go get rid of them on a planet and you've brought, like, a crystal?
I think the big difference is that there's going to be a concerted effort to get rid of them now. Like, the Sills would love to kill them off, but the Zills are effectively immobile, so I don't think they could kill off Drox that they couldn't, like, get at, because they're rocks. They're just rocks. Rocks can't chase Drox.
Ah, my favorite Dr. Seuss book, mm-hmm. Rocks on Drox.
Yeah, Rocks on Drox. You know, and then bagels with locks show up toward the end of it.
Flocks and flocks of all these Drox.
Oh, but put your stocks in those fine rocks, because only rocks can defeat the Drox.
It's a great book we've got now. Mm-hmm.
I think we've written a wonderful Planet of Twilight Dr. Seuss style book here.
Good. If you're a Dr. Seuss-esque artist, get in touch.
That would be an amazing thing if that was a type of person that still existed.
Also, it would sell to no one, because everyone would be like, the fuck is this? Well, how is this a Star Wars thing? It's about crystals and bugs? And you're like, oh, you had to have read this one shitty book.
Well, now, technically, we removed all references to Star Wars from it, except for Drox and Rocks, because Luke doesn't really rhyme with anything particularly good. So we had to take that out of there.
Yeah.
Well, that's not necessarily true, because the type of crystal that gets converted from a rock is a spook. So Luke talks to spooks about the rocks that hate the Drox.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's a great book. It's going to be
great. I love it.
It's just what we wanted. Anyway, John, oh, man, how do we usually end these things? Do I ask you what your favorite thing about this book is?
No,
maybe?
We usually don't. Usually we wait for the wrap-up to do all the nonsense.
Oh, you're right. That's right. So I guess we're basically just done.
I mean, we do need to let you know that, yes, of course, next episode is going to be our wrap-up.
We always do a wrap-up episode that gives us a little break from having to desperately read constantly. So the next episode of Expounded Universe is going to be one of those. As always, if you have questions about the book that we just read,
anything that you feel we didn't cover, any questions you have about what might have gone on during things,
mm-hmm.
Just let us know. Of course, you can get us on our Discord if you go to our Twitter page at System Mastery. You can find the pinned tweet that has the link to that.
Yeah, go into our Expounded Universe thread and ask us your questions.
Yeah, you can ask questions there.
Put in put Planet of Twilight in your question so that we can search for it. So just put Planet of Twilight before your question, and that way it'll be easier to search for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we can do that. Mm-hmm. And of course, you can tweet at us, do whatever.
Email us, whatever you want to do. Yell things into the air and hope that perchance a wind makes...
Just yell hashtag System Mastery into the air.
Well, yeah, because we live in the story dimension, so if you yell, like, names for us or whatever, then we get them and it keeps us alive from the nothing.
Yeah, I had a small child just yell John at me, and that's the reason I have this name.
Weirdly, it didn't sound like John at all. See, now, if you're wondering about a joke that we've made way too many times with the show before...
Moonchild is the one.
Yeah, I think that's the one that we make the most often. All right, so otherwise, if you like what you hear and you want to hear some more good news, there's bonus content.
Ooh, baby. You know what we do in bonus content? Why, we go to Wookiepedia and we find some nonsense to bring back to you.
We regret wearing a long sleeve shirt in our hot ass recording area.
Well,
but yeah,
you do.
I do. I'm regretting a lot right now. But basically, John, all you got to do is go to patreon.com/systemmastery. If you go to that first one, it's all porn. Don't do it.
Don't do it. You have to have a dash first.
patreon.com/systemmastery. That's keep you safe from the horrible porn, go to support us at the $2 level. It'll end up being about $4 a month, and you will unlock 4 episodes on average, usually sometimes more, 4 episodes of bonus content related to Expounded Universe per month.
God dang.
Plus 2 more episodes of System Mastery stuff.
For
$4. What a great deal it is, right?
God dang.
So good. Thank you, John. Thank
you're
you.
Welcome.
Thank you for those.
I am adding something.
Yeah,
to
you
this.
Are. You're contributing. You're doing color commentary.
That's me. Boom, shakalaka. He's on fire.
That's gotta hurt.
From downtown.
Turbo.
I'm just doing NBA Jam now.
Well, that's very useful to me. Oh, big head mode.
No one ever says big head mode.
I just
get out of here.
I just said big head mode.
Rocco. This is me, kid.
I just want him to announce things that are the announcer from NBA Jam to announce things that aren't correct.
He's wearing sneakers.
Slaps only, no odd job. All right. So anyway, go to System Mastery at Patreon and give us some $2.
Give it, and that, you'll get
so much bonus. There's more levels too. Just research them, find out what else you can earn. Usually, you want that $5 level to get the last secret bonus content episode, the secretest, most creamiest of the crop of them all.
Yeah,
every episode guaranteed creamy.
Ugh.
We really put a lot of cream into those episodes.
So much cream.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And it rises to the top.
The cream rises to the top. Let me tell you, every kind of cream you're hoping for.
Look, let me tell you, on balance, off balance, doesn't matter.
And let me point out that it's a great deal at $5 and whatever. Here you go. That's what you got to do. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you in a week with more Star Wars content and right away with bonus content if you're into it. And until such time as then, I've been Elan Sleazebagiano.
And I'm letting Death Sticks go their own way.